Welcome to another show. We have Chris Daly, who has a blog on Jamaicans.com, and his blog is Me Thinking, Are You? Take it away, Chris.
Thank you, Janice. We have a wonderful guest this evening. We have Mr. Dennis Chung. Dennis hails from Jamaica. He was born in Kingston, reared for significant years in Mandeville, and now he's residing in Kingston. He's earned a master's degree in accounting in the University of West Indies, Jamaica, and is a member of the Institute of Chartered Accountants of Jamaica. Mr. Chung runs his own company and guest lectures on economic issues at the University of New Orleans. He has written a column in the Financial Gleaner and then Jamaican Observer since 1993 till now. He has also a website. It's www.mindyourbusiness.com. That's
MINDUHUH.
BUISINESS.com. And this website is dedicated to providing financial and business advice to individuals and to small businesses. He also does a blog, and that's DCJottins@blogspot.com. That's DCJottins@blogspot.com. Dennis is an author of the book Charting Jamaica's Economic and Social Development, a much-needed paradigm shift. Welcome, Dennis, to our conversation this evening.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great to have you. Well, let's open talking about your book. When I've opened your book, I'm left with two emotions. I sense a fierce impatience and a sense of hopefulness. You want Jamaica to move ahead very quickly because you see its potential. How do you balance these two elements?
Yeah, well, I'm impatient because I think that we have not developed for too long, and I think that we should have been developing since independence. You know, there was a lot of hopefulness, a lot of hope in 1962, as I gather, since I wasn't born then. And we really have not achieved the hope and the dream that we've set out. And I also believe that Jamaica has a whole lot of potential. I mean, we only have to look at the individual performances in music, like a Bob Marley, in sports, like a Usain Bolt, and, you know, the list can go on and on about the great things that Jamaicans can achieve. And what you notice is that they've achieved it individually. Can you imagine if we were all to get together and move the country forward in a very uniform way, a very positive way, a team building way? I mean, can you imagine how great Jamaica is? Because with all its problems, I mean, on the world stage, Jamaica is still a very, very strong brand.
Amen. That's super. When you wrote this book, I know you're writing for the other generation. Your son is very prominent in the foreword, but you have a wider audience. Who can best be served by your book? Who did you have in mind when you wrote this book?
Well, I had the average Jamaican in mind. I mean, I myself, I'm not an economist, and what I've been doing really is really using my accounting skills to sort of crunch the numbers to provide an objective place as to where we are. And I think it's written in as simple language as possible so that the average man on the street can understand it, because I think that change is going to come from an education of the masses. You know, what I'm trying to do is start a dialogue, start a debate so that we can push the change, because change does not necessarily, well, it has never really come from leaders. Leaders have always been pushed by the average citizen, and that is the person that I'm trying to get to with this book, both by them reading it and by debating it, starting a debate from it. So, you know, a lot of people I know have read it. I've just walking on the road or driving, you know, the average citizen on the roads, a lot of people, you know, will say to me, "Boy, Mr. Chung, you know, we've read this article or we've read the book." So I think that the message is getting to people, and hopefully, you know, it can have a snowball effect where ideas and solutions come to the minds of the people, so that we can push the leaders to change in the direction that we want it to.
It's very quite evident. And I like your approach. And if you folks, as you read this book, is very illustrative with charts and tables, just to give you a sense of where we are. And it's done in a really neat manner. And he's an accountant, as he shared in training. And usually, as you said, you'd like to start a conversation with the masses and then bubble up. So a social change would have to take place for this thing to happen, as opposed to just looking at the number crunching. You're trying to start a conversation here and excite someone's imagination of what's possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. You know, it's very important, I think, for us to get people focusing on these things. I mean, when I look at Jamaica, I was very surprised the other day to find out that the best-selling newspaper is actually the Star. You know,
really?
Now, you know, yeah, we can't get ahead by reading the Star.
Okay.
The Star is all about gossip.
And for those of you who are in the diaspora that don't know the what's in the Star, it's could you tell them it's more of a tabloid type
of paper, isn't it? The Star is like a tabloid paper, and you know it really focuses more on tabloid stuff, you know what's happening with this person or you know
right.
some outlandish.
The gossip column.
It's a gossip column. It's similar to the Star. In the U.S. they have a Star, and it has the same sort of thing.
Yeah, it's the same thing. So, you know, I'm trying to get people to be more aware and for us as Jamaicans to take more responsibility for our country and our country's future rather than leave it up to politicians and the government, because, you know, the change will never come from them. I mean, they've been doing this thing since 1962, and we've not been getting any better. So I want people to get more aware. I want people to get more involved. And I think it's happening. I mean, along with not just the literature, but also the talk shows that are happening now in Jamaica, I think people are becoming more aware. People are demanding a lot more in terms of progressive action from our leaders. So, you know, I'm hoping that it won't take a long time to really develop. But I see signs of it, and you know, it's something that is talked and written about. Yeah.
All right. Well, given that, lay out for our audience the three top challenges from your perspective that the country of Jamaica faces.
Number one, discipline. Discipline in terms of adhering to structure, in terms of adhering to law and order. Number two, it's crime. We have to control the crime situation, which is very strongly linked to discipline.
Okay.
And number three, I would think, is you know the fact that we don't produce enough. We're really just a trading company in the context of a country. We're actually, for the past 46 years, we've run a fiscal surplus. That's 12 years of those 46 years. So we continuously spend more than we earn. So those are the three main challenges that Jamaica faces. And if we were to fix those things, then I think we would fix all the social and economic issues that we have.
Okay, and if you will just give us the at a high level, the three things, the three drivers that would give us some giddy and kickstart Jamaica on its journey back to greatness.
Well, I think we need to pay attention to the little things in terms of the discipline. You know, it's not about first going at solving the crimes, the complicated crimes like murders, but, you know, getting the discipline back on the roads, getting the discipline back in terms of night noise, getting the discipline back in terms of environmental protection. So that's one. Number two, I think if we were to create a more facilitative environment for small businesses to flourish, so that we cut out the bureaucracy more than anything else, I think that would also have a very great impetus. And number three, I think, is, you know, we need to understand that Jamaica is not about the Jamaica Labour Party or the People's National Party. It's Jamaica. And, you know, if you support someone who is in the PNP or in the JLP, then you're aligned to that party today. And if you support someone in the other party tomorrow, then you're aligned to that party tomorrow. So there does not seem to be any Jamaicans, but rather JLP and PNP. And once we can move beyond that, I think that would be a very significant development for us.
So you said social change, in most history is taught that social change, there's a political component to it, but the current one that we're practicing is not allowing us, it puts us in a stalemate position. Mm-hmm. What are some of the effective changes that you can see to the political structure that we have that will make it not an impediment, but an engine for change?
Well, I think we need to move away from the Westminster model. The Westminster model works well in the United Kingdom because they have over 600 members of parliament, of which about 120 form the government, which means that there's another about 500 members of parliament that sits on the back benches and in the opposition. So there is a strong opposition to government if government steps out of line. In Jamaica, what we have is about 30 or 31 members of parliament on the government side, of which almost all of them form government. So who opposes them? So I don't think that system works in a small state like Jamaica. We need to move to a system like what's in the United States, which is a constitutional republic, where the executive is different from the elected members that sit in the House, so that there's a separation of power. And I think that if we were to do that, then it would bring greater accountability because people are not conflicted in terms of their roles as members of parliament and their roles as government.
Right.
And it would be greater representation to the people. So if we were to do that, I think that in itself would help to fix the political process more than anything else. And that would usher in a new social era in terms of the change that we need for people to be truly represented and not conflicted in government.
Just as a follow-up to that, I've heard that there's some changes to the Constitution being, as far as the structure being contemplated. Do you know if any of these ideas are on the table?
It was talked about in early years, but nothing much has happened with it. There has been one or two calls for it to come back on the table. But, you know, the truth is that it's not really something that governments are interested in at the moment because it really can work against governments. But I'm hoping that it will at some point in time, very shortly, come back on the table and be finally pushed through. I think people will have to make a cry out for it to happen. And, you know, one or two people have been doing that. But one of the biggest issues that we face now that people have been more concerned about is crime. So, you know, it has sort of taken a backseat. But it's still a very important piece of legislation that needs to come in play. And, you know, hopefully we can resolve the other major issues and get to that as soon as possible.
Your fine work is very contemporary. It addresses the present economic meltdown that the entire globe is involved in and hopes of providing a roadmap to recovery. one of the Achilles heels of Jamaica has been its debt. Debt burden has always been a drag. And I saw a recent cartoon that depicted the prime minister trying to bail out a small boat, and there's this large shark of a boat, the IMF, lurking in the background. Can you speak to the role that you've seen on the IMF and our debt situation?
Yeah, well, I think that the government will have to go to the IMF. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I've been saying from last year that, you know, we should have tried to go from last year and sort of put an insurance policy in place because the debt situation is rather very serious. And it's not because of the level of debt. We tend to focus a lot on the level of debt, but debt is good as long as the marginal return on debt is greater than the marginal cost.
Okay.
What has happened to us is that we have always spent our debt on consumption, which does not give you a value added. So that has gotten us into the situation that we are in today. We're presently facing a serious debt crisis because we're paying 56 cents out of each dollar to debt servicing, which leaves little for spending on Jamaica and the Jamaican population. So it's a very, very serious challenge. I believe that the IMF will give us some breathing space, but it won't solve the challenges, really, because we really do need a lot of money. So I think we'll have to look more towards changing our cultural habits in relation to our consumption. For example, our consumption of oil, which I think is the biggest plus that we can get, because when oil was at $30 a barrel, oil made up 23% of imports. So at $70 a barrel, you can imagine where it is now. So that's our biggest gain. So there are a lot of a few things that we can do. For example, putting a good public transportation system in place might save us maybe $300 million for the year. Mm. Things like getting more productivity into agriculture. So our debt is going to be fixed by our policy actions and not necessarily by the IMF, who is really just going to give us some breathing space. You know, it's like a man who's drowning, and
right,
the IMF throws you a raft or something to float with. But you're drowning still.
Yeah, but so you're saying the monies that we get from the IMF should be earmarked towards investment more than consumption.
Yeah, we need the IMF is really a balance of payment support. What I'm saying is, you know, we're going to get that money from the IMF, and we're going to use it to shore up our NIR and use it for balance of payment support. Money is fungible, so money will find its way into the system. But what we need to do is refocus a lot of the current resources that we have. For example, as I said, if we were to put in place a good transportation system, then that in itself frees up a lot of money for us to use. If we also were to control the crime situation, then we would have people putting in a lot of private capital into investment.
It would be a magnet more than a...
Right. So the money from the IMF is really just going to ensure that our balance of payment situation is supported. But it's our policy actions, our fiscal policy actions, that is going to drive investment and drive investment into productive areas, and also ensure that we reduce our trade deficit, and that will then flow through to the fiscal accounts and reduce the fiscal deficit. So that is really what we need to focus on in reducing our debt, and not necessarily the IMF, because that money is not going to come in to pay off debt. It's really just there as a balance of payment support.
It's a bridge over troubled waters of sorts.
Yes.
Okay. Your book also suggests another policy action, the one of divesting itself of or privatizing certain institutions like Air Jamaica, some of the sugar countries, the Cayman Islands, Track Limited, and some of other government-held institutions. if this should occur, who would own these assets? And you suggested that we know we'd get some infusion of foreign capital, but how do we balance the infusion of foreign capital who may have different desires on our monies than the sustainable development of Jamaica?
Well, I believe that there is some capital in Jamaica, and certainly you might see some of the capital from the local capital going into some of these entities. But the real capital that you need, it means that there's going to have to be some foreign partnership. Now, the factor is that the reason why we still need overseas investors to come in is because we've squandered our own resources locally. I mean, in the 1990s with FinSAC, local capital was obliterated.
Okay.
So, you know, there's really not much local capital available. So, you know, regrettably, we're still going to have to go to get foreign investors to come in, which is we should not be doing this really at our stage of development as a nation. But because we've wasted our resources as a country, then, you know, we still have to do that. But it's a stepping stone. We need to ensure that when it comes in, that it is being used in a value-added way, so that we are benefiting from it, and that, you know, the capital that's built up locally in the future, that, you know, we don't destroy that again.
Okay.
Because the only way that we can really develop is if locals invest. But, you know, we're at the point now where, you know, locals have been destroyed in the 1990s, and there's not much more local capital here. So we're still going to have to go that route.
One of the ideas I hear floating around is this idea of a diaspora bond, where, you know, as your book clearly stated, there's as many Jamaicans living outside of the U.S.,
yeah,
outside of the country than are in, that are still have a vested tie to the island. Do you ever take on I guess this kind of instrument for capital raising have been used successfully in Israel and in India, in tying them back to their native country. Do you have a perspective on that idea?
Yeah, well, I mean, the diaspora is an investor just like anybody else. And, you know, if you're going to have a difficulty raising money on the capital markets, then, you know, how are you going to get money from the diaspora? The diaspora has worked just as hard for its money like anybody else. So, you know, what is really needed is that we need to ensure that the investment in Jamaica is attractive, and then maybe we can appeal more successfully to the diaspora, because, you know, we've gotten rid of things like crime and the obstacles to investments, the bureaucracy. But, you know, as a diaspora person, are you just going to put your hard-earned money into an investment just because you're a Jamaican? I don't think so.
There is some evidence that because it's not the monetary gain is secondary to the bonding that that person has with their native land, and so if it's larger than just the monetary gain, that they may free up some funds, and so that's there's sort of tight bonds, say, between the U.S. and Israel, and even from India, that that's why that's being considered at some length.
Yeah, but I mean, I understand the concept of it, but you know, if someone is going to do that, then they have to have the confidence that, you know, their investment is going to be safe. I mean, if you
right.
look at India or Israel, I mean, those economies, they don't suffer from the same situation like we do. You know, we have a higher murder rate than Colombia. We have a significant crime situation. For example, Prelia Lasney in agriculture, you know, we have a situation where someone stole a whole beach. You know, I think that even people in the diaspora want to know that, even though they love Jamaica, that their money is safe.
You're right.
You know, so I mean, we have to clean up those things first. You know, I don't think it makes sense going to the diaspora without first showing that you're really serious about your actions. I mean, even when you're begging, you wouldn't expect to get money from someone if you beg money to go and buy drugs rather than beg to go and buy food.
Exactly.
You know, so it you have to have a responsibility even as someone who is asking for people to invest in you. I think those are some of the first things we need to do. We need to show that we're serious. And I think the diaspora would be doing Jamaica a favor by saying, listen, I will do this, but show me first what you're going to do.
Okay.
You know, I think the diaspora also has that responsibility.
So the diaspora plays a role of accountability.
Yeah, yes, and the diaspora is a very powerful voice. I mean, the diaspora makes I saw in your note about US $40 billion a year. That's very powerful. I mean, this is the opportunity that the diaspora has to say, listen, we will do this, but this is what we want in return as investors. You know, you hear stories of people coming down here and sending money down to buy a house or build a house and
mm-hmm.
turning up a few years later and it's not there.
Right.
You know, we have to show the responsibility on this side by first demonstrating that we're putting the proper fiscal policies in place. And I think the government is doing that now. The government has an uphill battle. I mean, you'd have seen that there has been a lot of arrests of police on corruption charges, and the Prime Minister is coming down very heavily on things like, you know, talking about what he's going to do about the night noise. The mayor is trying to clean up the streets. But there have been so many years of neglect that it's going to take a while now. When all of that is coming more onto stream and people are seeing those results, then I think we'll be able to have a successful diaspora bond. You know, when people see that, things are happening where I will feel comfortable to come back to Jamaica.
Okay.
You know.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
The other issue that you dealt with, you addressed is leveraging technology as one of the drivers to boost our possibilities. But in addition to the technology, you also address vocational education and the upgrade mm-hmm. of the system that's in place you deem as very critical.
Mm-hmm.
Speak to us how you think this should be implemented, what is needed, and in what segment of Jamaica you see this development have an impact.
Yeah, well, I think technology definitely is a tool that we can use, for example, in agriculture, also in tourism. Technology is not necessarily a new computer. What technology is a new way of doing things. And, if you look at agriculture, for example, you know, 70% of the agricultural lots in Jamaica are 5 acres and less. Now, how do you as a farmer with a 5-acre plot compete with a man in the United States with a 100-acre plot and a tractor and, you know, three people working on a 100-acre farm? You just can't compete. We also need to apply technology for greater productivity, like what the government is trying to do with greenhouse technology. And, things like agro-processing. From the education side, I recommend vocational education, because if you're at ground zero and assuming that university education is at 10, then you have to go to 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 before you get to 10. And I think vocational education is certainly the way to do that, because, you know, between 0 and 10, you need to develop an economy and get people moving along that path. And I think the way to do it is first to get it done through vocational training, like things like heart and that sort of thing. And
okay.
also in the areas that we have a comparative advantage in, which is agriculture, tourism, and more recently mining. So I think, you know, if I was looking for a sort of quick fix to the solution of education, I would more be looking vocational, so at least I will give someone a greater skill than he has now sitting on the the street corner every day, so that he will at some point in time get up to the tertiary. But that critical link is needed in the middle rather than just sticking with a traditional education system where you go to secondary and up, because a lot of people are just not there yet. You know, so okay. We have to transform labor.
Okay, could you explain for some, because you're speaking to a much more international audience, they may not understand what you mean by the tertiary level, so could you explain that, please?
Yeah, the tertiary level is a university level, like the bachelor's degree and up. That would be the tertiary level. You know, and I'm saying that, you know, right now we have less than 1% of our Jamaican population going to tertiary institutions. We have 70% of our student body leaving secondary school without one subject, a pass in one subject at all, you know, with no passes at all. So let us go to vocational training that those people are more suited to right now in order to improve productivity and improve it over time, until we can get to a point where we have a higher attendance at university. So it is really a stepping stone, vocational training, to what you want longer term, but it fills a gap in the meantime.
Right. One of the sense I get, you mentioned agriculture, the importance of agriculture to Jamaica, and somehow the stereotype associated with agriculture is it's a profession for losers. And I couldn't disagree more. How do we get folks excited about, as I call it, food security? My reading is that Jamaica is only producing 40% of its food consumption.
Yeah.
And that's not sustainable if you're going to really develop.
No, it's not. And the reason why agriculture is not seen as something desirable to get into is because we have decimated it. I mean, we've put, from the 1970s with the land lease program, we've put people on 5 acres and less. I mean, how much living can you make on a 5-acre plot? You know,
right.
What we need is more large-scale agriculture, and agriculture geared more towards a better way of life rather than just a political reason to give someone a piece of land. And that's
a political payoff in the past versus something that's going to drive the economy.
Right, and that is why people have moved away from agriculture. But, you know, I think that if you look at, for example, the first quarter of this year, agriculture had grown by 10%. Every other
yes.
sector had declined. The fact of the matter is, even in a recession, there is one thing you have to do, and it's eat.
Right.
You know, so I mean, agriculture will always do well. Now, the other thing is this: if you look at the census, the agriculture census before the last one done, it showed that agricultural products in its primary form contributed about 7% to GDP. But when you add agro-processing to that, it went up to 16%. So it shows the potential that we have, because there's no other place in the world that you're going to get Jamaican ginger than in Jamaica. There's
yeah.
no other place in the world you're going to get Jamaican Scotch bonnet pepper than in Jamaica. You know, I've seen where one factory actually created a Scotch bonnet flavored ketchup that does very, very well. You know, we don't have enough ackees to export. You know, so there's a lot of potential that we have in agriculture. And I think that is really the gold mine that we have. I mean, it's not oil, it's not gold in the hills that people talk about. It's gold from growing food products in Jamaica. Because, you know, people want Jamaican yams, they want Jamaican bananas. I mean, we should be thinking of using or scientific research to put things like our cassava, yams, and bananas into an edible form like rice. That's
mm-hmm.
easy to prepare. You know, so once you use the area of our agricultural produce that we have a comparative advantage in, we should be applying science and technology to that to get it to a more value-added product so that more money remains in the country, rather than just exporting it in a primary product way.
since the food supply has been coming from outside, and some of the indigenous foods haven't been on the top of folks' taste buds, how do we realign them and get them excited about locally produced stuff? And locally produced food actually has some other benefits, and everyone's kind of going back to locally produced. Is that an issue, given that everyone's looking at international television this day and get excited by the marketing and advertising they see in those on television?
Yeah, well, that definitely is an issue, but, you know, there's one thing that solves all of that, and it's price.
Okay.
You know, I mean, if we can get our agricultural produce, and this is something that Christophe Dunn, the agriculture minister, is working on very diligently. If we can get it to a point where we are producing at a higher productivity and producing at a lower cost than what the imports are coming in at, because that has always been an issue. We are producing our goods at a higher cost than the imports. Now, what we need to do is for example, carrots. You know, we shouldn't be relying on the man on 5 acres or less to bring in the carrots in for sale. What we should be doing is planting 100 acres of carrots, and we should be planting 100 acres of tomato and applying the latest technology to it and ensuring that the costs of production are much lower. Now, if that is done, I mean, I guarantee you people will buy Jamaican produce. I mean, I for example, you know, KFC in Jamaica.
Yes.
Is one of the highest volume sales. I mean per capita, Jamaicans eat a lot more KFC than most places in the world, right? I mean,
yeah.
It had one of the stores was actually the highest volume per capita in the world at one point in time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it after Bolt? Because he's endorsing that.
Yeah.
So that could be a factor.
Yeah, one of the reasons for that is because the Jamaican chicken actually tastes better.
Okay.
You know, right, the chicken from Jamaica broilers. I mean, I know that. I mean, having worked at KFC also, I know that when you import the chicken, it does not have the same flavor like the local chicken. And it's like that for a lot of Jamaican products. You know, people would love to eat the yams and the bananas that Jamaica produces every day. But number one, it's the price of it is prohibitive, because it's much easier to buy some rice and that goes a farther way. And number two, you know, we can't get enough quantity produced to fulfill the market need. So, you know, once we work on those things, I have no fear about Jamaican produce being accepted, not only in Jamaica, but internationally, if we were to do that. But, you know, we have to get that productivity correct first, and then everything else, I think, will fall in order.
All right. As we talked about a little earlier, the diaspora does have a big clout and a big impact. Apart, right now, it's being used primarily as a remittance tool. How else would you like to see, and we talked about the accountability issue that they can bring to bear, how else do you think the diaspora can become engaged to create the kind of hopeful future that you see for Jamaica?
Well, the diaspora actually remits more foreign exchange to the country than anything else. I mean, remittances actually earns a lot more foreign exchange than, or slightly more than tourism itself. So
wow.
It shows a powerful voice that the diaspora has. Now, what the diaspora needs to do is, you know, assemble itself into a unified body and have, you know, one voice speaking. Because the 2.7 million Jamaicans living abroad and you provide in, you know, maybe about 30% of our foreign exchange earnings. I mean, that's powerful. I mean, the fact that you don't live here is not really essential, because you are really the ones who are sending back most of the money to the country. So I think that you know, by having lobby groups, I mean, if people come to you for bonds, then, you know, there are certain things that you're going to want to see happen. You know, I mean, money makes the mayor run. And,
okay.
You know, if you are providing this revenue source, then obviously you have a strong voice if you come together to speak to not only the government but the other powers that be in the private sector and so forth. I think the government is trying its best. The diaspora can also bring back a lot of ideas. I mean, you're living in countries where the things that we're trying to implement is actually working already. You know,
right.
So it's not just a matter of bringing back money. It's a matter of also bringing ideas to us. You know, what we if you think about it, one of the things the diaspora has always been doing is also bringing back, you know, medical, free medical service and this sort of thing. I think we need more than that, because that is really giving us a fish rather than teaching us how to fish.
Right. So
you know,
the intellectual horsepower needs to be a part of the diaspora's contribution.
Exactly. That is a very, very critical part that's needed, and which we really have not been getting. And with this, in this day and age of, you know, technology and the internet, there's so much ways that information can get back to us. You know, whatever you see that is good in Jamaica, it's always good to celebrate it, you know, even from where you are. So if you do that, then, you know, it has a more powerful voice than that one or two persons crying out in Jamaica. So if you do that, you know, encourage the behavior and also influence the behavior by your own intellectual contributions, I think it has a lot more powerful effect than just giving us a fish.
Okay. I want to switch roles now. I want you to put on your forecasting hat. I want you to think of the time when the global economy has recovered and Jamaica is on its way.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see Jamaica on its path to greatness?
Well, the global recovery does not have anything to do with Jamaica's path to greatness, because remember that when the global economy was doing very well, we were also still setting up ourselves for this day by borrowing more and more and more.
Okay.
The greatness that we're going to see is going to come from a cultural and social change of the people of Jamaica, so that we actually put the proper structure from a social and economic point of view to ensure that, you know, we are growing, right? I mean, the global economy, if we continue on the same path, all it's going to mean is that we're going to borrow more money. You know, what we need is a whole paradigm shift. We need a new way of thinking. You know, we need to start saying, listen, we want a society that is very ordered, very disciplined, crime-free, and that we're always earning more than what we spend. And until we have that cultural and psychological shift in the minds of our people, then, you know, it doesn't matter if the global economy is growing at 100% a year. You know, we're still going to have a problem. And what we're going to be doing by borrowing money is just postponing that day of reckoning when we have to deal with that problem. So our greatness is going to come from within. It's not going to come from the global economy.
Dennis, thank you for your fine insight. How would people get a hold of this really fine work that you've produced?
It's on Amazon. You know, Amazon is far-reaching today, so
exactly.
It takes like about 3 or 4 days to get to you. So, you know, anyone who wants a copy can just go onto Amazon, type
and repeat
my name,
the title for us again for the folks.
Charting Jamaica's Economic and Social Development. A much-needed paradigm shift.
Oh, and also, if you go to JamaicanDiaspora.com and click Caribbean Culture Store, the book is on sale right there as well.
Right, right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Dennis.
And
Denise, go ahead, Denise.
Oh, Dennis, could you repeat your website again? It's Mind Your Business.
Mind Your Business, and it Mind Your Business, and in if you're familiar with the Jamaican dialect, Y-U-H is actually your.
Okay.
So right, so it's really Mind Your Business, but we use a Jamaican dialect, which is Mind Your Business. MindYourBusiness.com.
And your website and your blog site is?
My blog is dcjottings.blogspot.com.
And Chris, if we'd like to learn about your blog, where do we go?
If you go to Jamaicans.com, and you'll see my blog post on Me Thinking Are You, and that's at blogs.jamaicans.com/me-thinking. That's T-I-N-K-I-N-G. Following the spirit of Dennis's language.
Of the Jamaican dialogue, yes. This was definitely a good interview, and we will talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot.